Good morning. I want to begin my remarks thanking historians among us for hard work over the years that makes an opportunity like this possible. To James Baggett, retired former member of our community, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, and to Jimmy Davis, my colleague who's vice president of our Germantown campus, for their years of research invested in our history, and also to Jenny Lowry and Tina Blackwell, who have helped pull lots of Cardinal and Cream editions across the last 150 years for me to review and so forth. Thank you to them. I've got a slideshow for you today, and some of the slides are a little hard to see, so I would hope that Willie and Josh will adjust the lighting as fits the slides, and we'll get started. As Dr. Dockery has said, Founders Day is a time for reflecting. It's a day set aside each spring semester to celebrate the founding of Union University and to praise God for his providence over her for the last 187 years. But today is February 5th. And even without the occasion of Founders Day, this is a day of reflection in the life of this community who experienced natural disaster together 2 years ago this evening. Today we will consider the two-year journey from crisis to rebuilding and renewal in light of other crisis journeys recorded in our long history. Today we celebrate the fact of the founding, yes, but also the profound fact that this institution has remained open through crisis that closed the doors of other institutions during those times. We will look at three crisis events in our history in addition to our own crisis 2 years ago. Each crisis has been different times and circumstances, three different physical locations, different threats impacting the survival of Union University. Yet as we study what has been recorded there, there is one thing that is noticeably the same, that the people of the 19th century and the people of the early 20th century claimed the same truth we claimed on February 5th, 2008, and the truth we claim this morning. I am reading this morning from a Bible that belonged to President Kimbrough and was placed in a time capsule laid under the cornerstone of a building that was rebuilt at another time of crisis after a fire on our campus in 1912. These are selected passages from Hebrews 13. Hear the reading of God's Word. Early in Hebrews 13, it says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." That scripture has always reminded me of what it's like to welcome a new class of freshmen. And I know we have new students to Union University today that we welcome. And we find our calling for you and the hospitality that we are to provide in Hebrews 13. Later in the chapter it says, "For God has said, I will never fail you nor forsake you. Hence we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. For Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever." And then later on, toward the end of Hebrews 13, this passage, "Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as men who will have to give account." The initial response to an F4 tornado that brought a 240-mile-hour wind roaring through the heart of our campus, causing $45 million in damage in less than 60 seconds. The unbelievable fact that all life was spared, despite the fact that the touchdown point for the tornado was in the heart of a residential complex housing 800 of our students. The search for student belongings as students watched on from the outside looking in, their faculty and staff restored as much of their possessions as was possible. It amounted to quite a lot. The removal of rubble. After a very long marathon spring semester of 2008, the graduation of its seniors. The spirit of unity and shared purpose and clear communication, this, the Weather Channel, which continues to tell our story, cited at the end of this last decade as one of the top 10 weather stories of the first decade of the 21st century. The ability to share our story, one purpose, one mind, with a world who was watching, the love for one another in this community expressed to us from our governor, United States Secretary Michael Chertoff, friends, that happens to be former governor and current United States Senator Lamar Alexander, local community pastors, churches, the provision of housing for our students in the form of what we finally named the JET, and students from across the United States, outpouring of love coming to our campus from so many different directions. The amazing feat of rebuilding 816 bedrooms in 17 new buildings in 6 months' time. And the leadership that reminded us of the providence of God and that helped us to claim that indeed there would be renewal out of this rubble. Pastor Tony Evans has said that providence is God's hand in the glove of history. Today we reflect on February 5th, 2008, in light of the Civil War of the 1860s, the cholera epidemic of 1873, and a campus fire in 1912, and we will see God's hand of providence over each one. The research I share comes from our own historical accounts, copies of the Cardinal and Cream. Those of you who are writing for the Cardinal and Cream realize what will come from your work for generations in the future. Also, some from the Lest We Forget annuals, as well as other information giving context to the times in which the crises occurred. The Civil War and cholera pictures that I share today are of really poor quality and are not reflective of events specific to Union. Research through the editions of the Cardinal and Cream was a bit distracting for me from time to time. Think about this with me. I noticed that the travel time for our debate team in the early 1900s was unbelievable. There was a report of the debate team leaving Mississippi State in Starkville after competition the preceding evening, at 7 a.m. to make a 117-mile journey to the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss University in Oxford, for a 3 o'clock debate that following afternoon. 8 hours for 117 miles of travel. I am thankful for living in this time. The Cardinal and Creams are filled with who preached where, who hosted whom, lots of information. I got a bit distracted on some menus that were there. An early 1900 menu featured creamed oysters, followed at the end by coffee and cigars. I've thought of myself as a self-made expert on the art of Southern cuisine, and I did not know creamed oysters, so I have the Google recipe now and am preparing to make them. Heavy cream, eggs, parsley, and oysters, of course, served over, in a very Southern style, toasted cornbread. Southern cooking, 1900 style. But enough of that. The period of the Civil War in the United States was 1861 to 1865. There were two campuses in operation during that time that would later make up Union University as we know it today, a campus in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, named Union University, and one here in Jackson named West Tennessee College. The stories of sacrifice, suffering, and sorrow coming out of the Civil War are not unfamiliar to us. It was a bitter period for our nation as a whole, and the impact on institutions of higher learning was significant and unique. Many, if not most, colleges in the South closed during the early days of the war, some never to open again. Students and faculty members alike joined the Army. In fact, it was very common for college campuses to become Army bases where troops were housed or hospitals where the wounded were treated. Focusing first on the impact of the war on our Jackson campus, what many of us refer to as the old campus, if you don't know, that campus here in Jackson, 6 miles away, was in operation until only 1975. Even before the state of Tennessee voted to leave the Union, Madison County had raised a regiment for the Confederacy, and the campus of West Tennessee College was transformed. Most of our students and faculty were organized as the 6th Tennessee Infantry Regiment. Of the 260 known West Tennessee College alumni, 79 of those 260 served the Confederacy through the establishment of the 6th Tennessee. The regiment fought in the battles of Shiloh, Murfreesboro, Missionary Ridge, Atlanta, Franklin, and Nashville. By the time the 6th Tennessee surrendered at Durham Station, North Carolina, at the end of the war in 1865, only 100 of the original 851 had survived. 500 of them lost at one time at the Battle of Shiloh. Students, if you don't know it, the Battle of Shiloh is now a featured national park about 65 miles from campus. You don't need to leave Union University without having visited Shiloh on the banks of the Tennessee River. The first use of our campus after the war closed was a Confederate hospital. The college was a perfect location. It was perched on a hill next to a railroad, and near that was a major waterway, which was major at the time, the Forkadeer River. The diary of a Confederate soldier from Denmark — Denmark is a small community in the southwest corner of our county — a soldier from Denmark noted in a diary about a hospital, perhaps the one that was on our campus. He wrote, "We passed a field hospital where we saw a number of poor, pale-faced fellows stretched on rough tables and scaffolds while the surgeons were cutting off limbs or hands or feet, some of which were scattered about on the ground where they had been thrown." Just a little more than a year later, into the war, Union troops chose Jackson as a site of massive occupation. Jackson had two very large railroad companies and a telegraph station, making it ideal for a quartermaster depot for the Union, where supplies were sent to other parts of the Army. Because of the continual uprising of the spirited citizens of Jackson, Tennessee, against their Union invaders, more troops were called in. And in 3 months, there were 28 infantry, 9 cavalry, and 11 artillery units housed within 6 miles of where we are assembled this morning. The Union took over our Jackson campus for its own hospital, and also for a campground and a headquarters in 1862, and ultimately for a cemetery. Union soldiers were buried on the northwest part of the old campus and later moved to the Corinth National Cemetery in Mississippi. Many years later, Jones Hall, a women's dormitory, was built over the burial site. Most of our own alumni are buried in Jackson's Riverside Cemetery. If you are traveling to downtown Jackson, you can see Riverside just to the right as you enter from the bypass. Union soldiers were called away from Jackson within the year that they had come because of war in other places, but as they withdrew, they burned many Jackson buildings. Historians quote diaries that describe Jackson at the end of the occupation as a shell, a gutted shell. Yet our college buildings were spared. West Tennessee College lost most of its family during the war, but providentially, not its property. And unbelievable to me, was able to reopen in the fall of 1865, the year the war ended. During the decade after the Civil War, the college experienced its largest enrollments. The first Union University campus in Murfreesboro suffered more considerably. The armies destroyed the library, and after the troops left, homeless individuals moved into our facilities there and destroyed the building interiors, tearing up walls to use the wood to build fires to keep warm. The campus did reopen in 1868, but as we will explore next, it closed for good in 1873 due to an epidemic of cholera. We know that the Civil War pitted neighbor against neighbor, brother against brother. A former president of Union University, President Pendleton, resigned his post as president at the start of the war because his pro-Union views were not necessarily well accepted in the Confederate community of Murfreesboro. But the real tragedy is not the loss of his position, but the loss of his son. President Pendleton's son, John, fought against him in the Confederacy and died at Perryville, which is another river town just a few miles from here. The former Union University president makes no mention of his son in his biography. History tells us that life in general after the war and during Reconstruction was onerous and unpleasant. People were rebuilding their lives out of nothing. On top of the basic efforts of providing food, rebuilding housing for their family, imagine the work that must have been required in investing in the rebuilding of Union University. The fact that our former leaders were able to prioritize getting the college going in such a short period of time inspires me for the work that we do today. These people lived a very long time ago, but what they did is totally relevant for what we are doing this very day. This was the generation of my great-great-grandparents. For you, great-great-great-grandparents, some of you, because of the gaps, great-great-great-great-grandparents. The point is, Civil War leaders, Civil War era leaders at Union University were great people that indeed responded to a faithful God and restored our campus. More devastation of a different kind followed less than a decade later. The cholera epidemic of 1873 was the cause of the closing of Union University Murfreesboro. Left financially vulnerable by the war, Murfreesboro was unable to sustain the degree of illness and death caused by the national epidemic. In 1873, the United States was still experiencing the immigration of multitudes of people brought to America by ships through ports in key cities. Cholera existed at almost every European port of embarkation for immigrants. In December of 72 and January of 1873, it is documented that nearly 2,000 immigrants from cholera-infected districts of Europe arrived in the U.S. ports of New Orleans and New York. Cholera is an acute illness caused by infection of the intestine with the bacterium, which is obtained by drinking water or eating contaminated food. The disease is spread from person to person in areas of inadequate sewage and drinking water and is characterized by rapid and at times violent fluid loss and leg cramps, which leads to dehydration and shock and death within hours of treatment. While the disease has been rare in industrialized nations for the last 100 years because of advanced water and sanitation systems, it is unfortunately still found today in the Indian subcontinent and in sub-Saharan Africa. It is easily prevented and easily treated with prompt attention, but the fact is that it is still causing epidemics in our world. This underscores the importance of the work that has been done by the Department of Engineering at Union working in Morocco to establish water purification projects. Many of you will travel in that region of the world even during spring break this year. So take this with you about the food that you eat. Boil it, bake it, peel it, or forget it. Boil it, bake it, peel it, or forget it. Our own historical records of the impact of the epidemic are sketchy. Just as we saw with the influenza outbreak last fall, the H1N1 epidemic, our college campuses where there are conditions of people living together in close quarters are places where illness is easily spread. There are numerous accounts in the history books about colleges that were closed, students that were sent home, never to open again. Diary recordings that I found from the epidemic's time go like this. Each morning, the first inquiry is about cholera. Each one approaches somebody else with grave face, and each asks the other about deaths during the night. No one knows whether his friend, whom he left at night in the fullness of life, may not in the morning be either a corpse or prostrated in the last stages of collapse. From another, I wake for breakfast to find panic because of cholera. The cholera mortality rate was great in the large city. One outbreak alone reported from St. Louis, the loss of 4,500 citizens, Cincinnati, 6,000. The death total in the mid-19th century from cholera was 5 to 10% of our total population. Related to the 1873 epidemic that was realized on our campus, there's a New York Times article that talked about that epidemic all around us, reporting as much as 20 and sometimes up to 180 deaths per county. The epidemic moved from the town of Murfreesboro onto the campus of Union University and served a final blow to the struggling institution. The institution was prompted to look to consolidate. The remaining property and records of Union and Murfreesboro were incorporated with West Tennessee College in 1874, and the beginning of what is now in the history books, the start of a first-class regional university, followed. Even though a scientist named John Snow had, in 1849, identified the fact that drinking water was responsible for cholera, it was 11 years after the Murfreesboro campus closed that scientist Koch did discover the bacillus and sanitation efforts were then directed in the right direction. From there, efforts were slow but became more sincere and eventually were successful. One gets a real sense that our history in the early 20th century is one of strength and prominence. The coming together of various institutions had taken place and the name Union University had been chosen. We were a campus fully engaged, but another crisis was coming. It is easy to envision the sources of fire when considering the realities of the type of building materials used to build our campuses, the common fact of smoldering cigars, the use of lanterns and candles, and droughts like the ones that we still experience in the West today. The Great Fire of Chicago in the late 19th century was attributed to a hot summer, a long drought, and a sprawling city constructed almost entirely of wood. Starting with a hay fire in a barn, flames spread, and within an hour, a massive wall of flame was blown northward into the heart of Chicago, burning down 34 blocks of the city, 4 square miles of buildings and property, and killing between 250 and 300 people. We were more blessed. Early in the morning of January 20th, 1912, around 4 a.m., a railroad engineer spotted fire on the Union campus as he drove by and used his train whistle as the sound of alarm. Students fled from their dormitories and were the first responders to the crisis. The record in the Lest We Forget annual on the calendar for January 20th that year reads, "Fire, fire." Such were the distressing cries that awoke the students on the dreary Saturday morning of present date to the sight of our burning buildings. Our two main buildings now lie a mass of burned ruins. These destroyed buildings, Powell Chapel and the main administration building, contained the library, but students were there and able to evacuate almost all of the library holdings because of their prompt responsiveness. As a result of fire, classes were held in a dormitory during the reconstruction of the campus, which saw the rise of two magnificent buildings. A Chattanooga contractor was chosen, and the administration set out to design a very large building that was to contain the chapel, the labs, the science labs, the offices, the reception room, the library, study hall, rooms for several literary societies, a philosophy room for Dr. Savage. Dr. Dockery mentioned in his prayer that we are assembled in a chapel named for Dr. Savage, president from 1890 to 1904, and then again after the fire from 1916 to 1918. But during these years, he was nestled in a philosophy room, enjoying himself, I'm sure. Other rooms specific to the disciplines, the J.R. Graves Society room being one of them. There are all these recorded notes about the time waiting on the new building to open being described as the wilderness journey waiting on the promised land. There's a quote that says, "Buildings are learned to love with an affection second only to that of home." It is a striking and compelling and really very familiar story to read about the work of West Tennessee Baptist churches in the rebuilding effort. Fundraising efforts were organized through the churches. First Baptist Church Whiteville, for instance, released their pastor for a month to do nothing but raise money on behalf of Union University. The time capsule that I mentioned earlier was in the building Barton Hall. What is also striking to me, though, in reading about the fire of 1912, is that a year into the fundraising effort of rebuilding our campus after the fire, at the first chapel of the spring semester in 13, University President Kimbrough announced his resignation to return to the pastorate. Cardle and Cream reporters noted this: "During his tenure, Union University has undergone the most trying period of her history, except, of course, during the Civil War. The work of rebuilding the campus has been accomplished with 1,000 cares and worries to the president. Nearly $50,000 has been raised while tending to the other cares that confront a college president. The work of the university carried on in the most cramped conditions, recitations in dormitory rooms, chapel in the dining room. Still, the number of students has not decreased, nor the work done by them fallen off. This fact speaks well for the president and his earnest co-workers and faculty. Dr. Kimbrough fought a good fight and has done his duty conscientiously at all times." That reminds me back to what I read from Hebrews 13. In the end, you know, it says, "Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as men who will have to give account." The Cardle and Cream reporter used the phrase 1,000 cares and worries when describing the role of the president in rebuilding our campus in 1912. Realizing the impact of the fire of 1912 and its effects on President Kimbrough that led to his resignation, and considering that unbelievably huge decisions that faced presidents such as Pendleton, Jarman, and Dockery during times of war, disease, fire, and natural disaster, I am thankful to God afresh this morning on this Founders Day for leadership that has brought Union University through. For men who, while keeping watch over our souls, the souls of students and faculty and staff alike, have worked faithfully, bearing the responsibility to give account to God for their leadership. We look back at what has happened to Union in times of war, epidemic, and fire, and see bountiful blessing over her when compared to the fate of others in those times. The same is true even as we reflect, in closing, on our own experience 2 years ago. In August 2005, another natural disaster devastated colleges and universities, primarily in Louisiana. Tulane, Xavier, Dillard, Loyola, Delgado Community College, Louisiana State University Health Science Center, and our own New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, which had to move from New Orleans to Atlanta while it rebuilt its campus there. A total of 18 colleges and universities in Louisiana, 4 in Texas, and 3 in Mississippi were impacted by Hurricane Katrina. Most closed for at least a semester. At least 3 extension site campuses have closed for good. Today, on average, these institutions are at 70 to 75% of their pre-Katrina enrollment levels, resulting in severe financial trouble with threats to the accreditation status of several. Yet Union University's enrollment soared past 4,000 students as the fall headcount this year came in, as compared to a fall enrollment 5 months before our storm of 3,300 students. That's an increase of 739 students, 475 of which are the undergraduate heartbeat of this institution. Even in these economic times, there is growth, financial health, and excellence in accreditation. And we find renewal then from our rubble. Today, on the occasion of our second anniversary of the storm, there has now been a completed task. Our rebuilding has come to an end. Union University is fully back. We are amazed at the perseverance of our tough-minded predecessors who lived in different times under very different circumstances, but we are struck most by not what is different, but by what is the same. And that is, as Hebrews 13:8 tells us, Jesus Christ, yesterday, today, and forever. In responding to various crises, Union University has a lesson herself to teach you, our students. Crisis will come in your life, to your family, in your churches, and in your work. Here are two cardinal and cream quotes from across the ages of this great university that I charge you to take into your life from this Founders Day. There hangs over us now a cloud. That cloud is the sorrow that we feel at our loss. But far be it from us to complain against our all-wise God. We know that He knows best. We believe that if we will but wait long enough, we will be very likely to behold the silver lining across our path. And another, words from 100 years ago that have been replicated many times over the last 2 years. God plants His footsteps on the sea and rides upon the storm, overruling all to our good and His ultimate glory. Thank you.